Welcome, friends, it's the Movie Boom Podcast. Enjoy the show. Zachie and Brian are talking about movies. Movie Boom Podcast on the radio.
Welcome to Movie Film. This is episode 145, brought to you by Mr. Boy Productions. It is Saturday morning, everybody. My name is Zaki Hassan. I'm here with Brian Hall.
Hey, good morning. When you said it's Saturday morning, I felt like we were on a radio show and I wanted to have like a little horn. It's Saturday morning. And, you know, wake up. It's Groundhog Day.
We've said this before. I mean, people obviously don't know when we record and people listen at their convenience, but whenever we get to do like an AM record, I'm a little bit happier, I have to admit.
Yeah, I think we're a little more pert, a little more conscious.
Yes.
Yeah,
a little perkier.
Oh, would you say?
Possibly.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out.
let's see how this goes. Yeah, usually when it's a night record, this is me right before. Okay. And then I have to tell myself, you love talking to Brian, Zaki. You love talking to Brian. Just remember.
And then you like log on. I'm like, what's up, dingus?
Yeah.
And you're like, I love talking to Brian. I love talking to Brian. You ready to do this or what?
Yeah. Well, it is always a pleasure to talk to you. And this has been a busy week and change since our last episode. So it's like we've got the built up. Well of topics and things to discuss, so it is a good time to do this show.
Yeah, I'm glad we're doing this too, because we were going to just do sort of like a brief episode, and then I happened to catch Rampage a little early, and we're like, oh, let's talk.
Let's do this.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Rampage is in theaters right now, yeah. And that will be the focus of our spoiler conversation later in the episode. But before we get there, I was at Silicon Valley Comic Con last week, Brian.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Well, this is again one of the nice things about being able to brandish a press pass is I've reached a point now where I'm drunk on power because I can bypass every single line just by flashing the badge.
Can you really?
I really can.
Like Wayne's World, you just kind of hold it up and people are like, okay.
Yeah, like what I do is I don't even show the badge and I just start walking and they're like, excuse me, sir, and I just flash the badge dismissively. Like I won't even turn around. I'll just kind of hold it up.
And your sons are like, Dad, please stop.
Yeah. So that's kind of fun. Like people are like, sir, are you supposed to be here? And I just hold up the badge. and they put up their hands and move backwards slowly.
right.
And I'm like, yeah, that's right. Yeah. So that's fun. Not as much stuff happened this year. I was hoping to hit up a few panels and stuff. I did not get to do that. I did walk through the autograph area just to see who was there. And I had mentioned, I think, a few months ago that Jeff Goldblum was going to be there. I was very excited about that. And then at the last minute, he bowed out. He's like, I'm not going to be there. They refunded my money, so that's okay. But
You had to pay in advance.
Yeah, you got to pay in advance. It's all like fancy schmancy now.
Yeah, I'm just picturing you, by the way, going up to one of these celebrities and being like, "I'll take this. I got this." We can show your badge and like kick them out of the chair and just start signing things.
Just start signing. Yeah, I saw that Mads Mikkelsen was there. I actually wouldn't have minded meeting him.
Yeah.
But like the prices for some of these things are a little bit ridiculous, you know.
Right.
But I went with the kids, so it's fun for them to kind of see people. And then Tony Dow and Jerry Mathers were there.
Really?
And I was like, kids, it's Wally and the Beeve. And they're like, we don't know what you're saying. I'm like,
yeah. Wally and the Beeve. That's amazing, actually.
Yeah, I know. But it made me kind of sad a little bit because they had no lines, and I'm like, that's Wally and the Beeve.
Really?
Come on, guys.
Well, depending on the price, I would have totally gone up. And
yeah, I mean, it was reasonable. But, I mean, I don't know. It's cool and sad at the same time sometimes to go to these things, you know?
Yeah, that would be tough. Seeing the people with no lines.
Yeah, you know?
You get your little, you know, they have the banner behind them from when they were most famous. And I don't know. Yeah. It's tough.
You know?
Yeah.
Like I remember last year, Matt Frewer was there. You know Matt Frewer?
Yeah, Max Headroom.
Max Headroom. And I spent a good, 10 minutes just chatting with him. And it made me sad that, like, there was no one really lining up to see him. I was like, oh.
Yeah, especially with the Leave It to Beaver guys. I mean, those are people we were on the tail end of.
Yes,
you
that's
know,
right.
So it kind of sadly makes a little sense. And Matt Frewer, what's funny? The first thing I think of with him is the dad from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Oh, yeah, the neighbors,
he was the
right?
neighbor, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, we can do that. but I wonder how many people at least.
You know what's funny is Matt Frewer in like the early 90s was the voice of the Pink Panther in an animated series.
Wow, I don't even remember him talking.
Yeah, well, there was normally he didn't talk. This was like the first time they had him actually talk regularly.
Hmm.
And it was Matt Frewer, and that cartoon is something my kids know. So like that when I entered, so I had to tell my kids, I'm like, he was the voice of the Pink Panther. And like, that's how they know him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just funny how how we plug in different ways, you know?
Yeah. Oh, and he was in the Watchmen. That's the last thing I can remember seeing.
Yeah, that's right. He was Moloch.
Yeah. So your youngest, that's what he would know him from.
From Watchmen. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, she, I guess she is your youngest now, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we sat down and we watched the scene where Hallelujah is playing. Yeah. That's a deep cut, folks. Find Watchmen, find the scene where Hallelujah plays.
And go, huh?
You know what was sad, though? I'll tell you. Stan Lee was there.
Really?
And Stan Lee is 95 years old at this point.
Yeah.
And my kids were like, can we meet Stan Lee? And I said, honestly, kids, no, we're not going to meet Stan Lee.
Mm.
Because I'm like, he's 95 years old. He shouldn't have to be doing this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if you've been following sort of the saga of Stan Lee over the past few months, but essentially he's sort of surrounded by people who are trying to squeeze every dime out of him while he's still around that they can.
Yeah, yeah.
And so essentially the people who make his arrangements, whatever, booked him for literally 1,000 plus like photo ops.
Wow.
Okay, now this is a 95-year-old man who's having to sit there and take pictures. And if you go online, you'll see pictures that are so discordant because he's just kind of sitting there and he's got this, like, shrunken face and you got people around. I mean, you know what I'm talking about, right? Those professional photo ops.
Yeah,
people.
Yeah.
And people are like, eh, and they got, like, big smiles and stuff. I mean, they're just happy to meet him,
sure.
I guess. But it's so, like, I'm like, I wouldn't want that to be my keepsake. That's my point.
Yes, yeah. And there's, people who are calling it out, right? Calling these people around them out and trying to look out for his best interest.
You can see video from this past weekend where he's being given books to sign and like his handler, whatever, is like S-T-A,
really?
Like having to tell him how to spell his name.
Oh, that's so sad.
It's really sad, And that's my whole thing. I'm like, Stan Lee doesn't owe us anything anymore. He should not be doing this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it is hard to see. It's hard to see somebody who has brought so much joy to so many of us, myself, you. I mean, I'm assuming everyone who's listening to this show,
mm-hmm.
To be reduced to this, again, he shouldn't have to be sitting for these photo ops and stuff. It's really, it's rough.
Man, yeah.
You know?
Well, I hope someone can, who's responsible can, step up in his corner for him.
The convention train has to stop at some point.
Yeah.
Speaking of trains, Brian, you made kind of a theme week.
Yeah, yeah. This was unintentional. It was pointed out by Zachy, and I was like, oh my gosh, you're right. Like, the last couple movies I've watched have all taken place on trains. First up, I watched Murder on the Orient Express, which was Kenneth Branagh. Remake of the Agatha Christie story, and I had
starring
not...
Kenneth Branagh and his mustache.
And his mustache.
I think the mustache gets second billing.
Yeah, this was something I had wanted to catch in theaters because I was just excited. Like, I don't know this story. I hadn't seen the film. I hadn't read the book, and I just wanted to see like a mystery and like a cool, beautiful location on this train and in the hills. And anyway, so all that to say, I missed it, and then I was eventually able to watch it at home in the comfort of my own home, and I was like, This is just great. This is just one of those things I've been wanting to do for a long time, and I was in a really good mood when I was watching it. And when it's all said and done, I think it lacked some pop.
Okay.
Yeah.
Twist ending. I was expecting you to be like, and I loved it.
Well, I mean, when it was all over, I was like, yeah, I'm glad I did that. I really, you know, I enjoyed sitting down and watching that. But as I talked about it with some people who had also seen it, I realized they were articulating things I was feeling but not bringing to the front of my mind.
Okay.
So that's just me being honest if I'm going to actually think it through and recommend it to someone. It's very linear, which makes sense, of course, because you're learning along with the main character what's actually going on. But yeah, there's something – it was just missing – it could have been a little bit more dynamic in terms of the characters just because they have such singular personalities and whatnot, but it just sort of feels like you sort of drop into one thing and only learn what you need to learn, and they're kind of interesting, and then you move to the next thing and the next thing. And so I wish it had a little more sizzle or flash or something to it. But you know, totally great streaming movie. You know, okay. Something if you do want to watch something you haven't seen, if you're not familiar with the story, like I think it's a great like Friday night rental kind of thing.
Okay.
And it was beautiful. I have to admit too, when it started, I was like, wow, this is really crystal clear. This must have been shot digitally. Mm-hmm. And come to find out it was shot on 70 millimeter. So I was like,
no
well,
kidding. Wow.
Yeah. Well, shows what I know. I always thought I was pretty good with my eyes discerning that stuff. But I was like, well, also, though, that's like such a rich capture that maybe that's why.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and it did well enough that they're doing a whole they're planning anyway, a whole franchise of Poirot movies.
Hey, I'm into it. I thought he was great, by the way. Like, he is a really captivating lead, like his quirks and his sort of sense of humor, but is also where he has to be like super straightforward and can't put up with other people's crap. Like, I thought he was, I would be happy to watch more movies with him.
So the accent's not distracting? It doesn't sound like Clouseau?
Well, not to me, but okay. I'm sure anyone who actually has a French accent would be like, you know, rolling their eyes.
We do not sound like that.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it'd be like an Italian person watching me the whole time going like, Mwah! You know, kissing my fingers and stuff.
Is that your impression of an Italian?
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't fly. It doesn't fly.
This is what you just did.
Yeah. You can't see it, but I'm putting my fingers together and shaking them.
That's great radio, Brian.
Yeah.
It's like when Italians do this, you know?
See? Perfecto. It'd be funny if we could see like a live map of the world, people who are listening in like Italy, all the lights are slowly going out.
Just blinking out one by one, yeah.
Yeah.
We lost Sicily. It is gone.
Anyway.
The Vatican has just tuned out.
Yeah. I'm like, do you want to hear Canada? And Zachy's like, no.
The Pope has unsubscribed. The Pope has unsubscribed.
Well, we'll get back.
Anyway, what else, Brian?
Keeping with the train theme, I watched The Commuter, my Liam Neeson's movie of the year. And I think he missed one last year, and Brian was disappointed. But you know, people who listen to the show know I love my January Liam Neeson movie.
That's right.
And I found Vera Farmiga was in it. I was like, ah, come on. Like, I love
her. Friend of the show, Vera Farmiga.
Patrick Wilson. I was like, give me a break. This is, like, amazing.
So what's the verdict? I haven't seen it yet, so I need to know.
I gotta sadly put this on the lower end. This is no Taken sequels. Those are awful.
Okay.
I was thinking about that, actually, because this is directed by, I just looked at his name. I don't know how to pronounce this.
it's the guy who's done, like, a whole bunch of them.
Well, he's done, like, Nonstop and all his sort of, like, I'm trapped on public transit and something.
Yeah, it's like Colette Sarah, I think is the last name.
Yeah. And, so I would say the Taken sequels are definitely the worst. Like, that's sort of like they gave a camera to a gorilla and started shocking him while he was rolling tape. That's how those movies look. Yeah. And, you know, and then the director was like, we got it. Moving on.
Okay.
Right? And then I thought about that.
You know, that description, suddenly it makes sense.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Suddenly those movies make sense, you know?
We were like, well, maybe think about it that way. He actually did a pretty good job.
I mean, I think I've said this before, but I'm shocked that a guy named Oliver Megaton doesn't know how to construct a coherent sequence in editing.
You know? I know. That. Yeah, that's the thing we've talked about where you can look it on YouTube. There's a moment. It's like a 13-second moment of Liam Neeson jumping over a fence, and it's shot from, what is it, like 13 angles or 8 angles or something crazy?
There's like 72 cuts in like a 10-second sequence.
Yeah, yeah. It's really funny. But anyway, this was filmed coherently, which I appreciated, but it just... I would put this on the lower end of the Liam Neeson action film, sadly, because I found myself kind of bored.
No, that's not acceptable.
Yeah, the plot felt a little small. I mean, it's I like the contained thriller sort of aspect of it, but it just, I don't know, it was missing some more surprises or twists and turns, and it felt a little too straightforward, and then... At the end, even some of the wrap-up stuff felt a little too clean. It felt like they cut out maybe some stuff that added a little more ramp-up to a reveal. Or again, this is... I enjoyed Orient Express more.
Okay.
Because I think, you know, it had a lot of great actors like kind of doing their thing. And like I said, I didn't know where it was going. But this one, you sort of meet the personalities that he's going to interact with on the train. And I didn't find any of them particularly interesting. And then you can sort of see where this is all going from the first act, basically, sadly.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just kind of a bummer. And it's another thing, too, where I haven't said this on the show or to you, but a lot of times I know I'll see people, and myself included, comment on bad special effects in movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I've decided I'm not going to hold that against the movie anymore because I'm certain... The filmmakers didn't want bad special effects. They could only afford the special effects they could afford. So within reason, I can't blame them.
Within reason, okay.
I'm certain that they wanted it to look as good as Ready Player One, but not everyone can afford that. So yes, within reason. But there's a whole action sequence in here where the camera, quote unquote, never cuts. I mean, it was very obvious when it was cutting. But yeah. It just looked not great. And it sort of was taking me out of it how... Yeah, kind of not corny, but it just, I don't know. I was like, if this could have been pulled off better, this could have been kind of thrilling, but instead it felt just kind of cheap or something or cheesy. And I don't know. It kind of bummed me out. I was thinking about it while I was watching it instead of being caught up in the moment.
Ugh, that
anyway.
Sucks.
Yeah, but I'm sure, but then I started thinking, oh, but I bet I know how this looked in his mind. You know, and I feel kind of, it's a bummer that it didn't land.
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever. This is for a longer discussion of this movie. But all that to say, I don't regret watching it because I'm going to watch every movie Liam Neeson puts out in January. But I just wish
But only in January.
Yeah, I wish it had felt a bit more surprising and a little tighter, a little more thrilling.
Well, Brian, I'm disappointed that you're disappointed.
Oh, Liam, no. You've brought me so much joy and entertainment in the winter season. Don't say that.
I'm going to quit making action movies
now. No, Liam, no.
I'm sorry, Brian.
Just remind me to... I'll send a fruit basket to Liam. Zeki.
See that you do.
Oh, you're still here. See that you do. I'm allergic to pears.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's you know, I still need to watch it, but yeah, I'm kind of bummed that, I mean, he said that this is going to be his last action movie.
You know, that's another thing. During some of the action sequences, when he's being punched, and maybe this has to do with fewer cuts, even though I am a huge advocate of fewer cuts, you could sort of see him waiting for the punch enough that it was distracting. I mean, every movie has that. But
so the 65-year-old man in action scenes is unbelievable to you, Brian? Is that what you're telling me?
You know what, though? But he sells... When he's doing it.
Okay.
You know? I don't know. No, I feel like you can adapt. I still want to see him making thrillers. Let's put it this way. I would still want to see him making thrillers, but I might be done with him on contained areas where there's a mysterious person he needs to locate or his family's in danger.
You know what? I think Liam Neeson would agree with you.
Yeah, just because if you're going to, that has been done so many times that you really are going to have to turn it on its head to make it interesting and not actually feel a little bit laborious.
Yes.
Yeah, now I'm finally being able to articulate this movie.
Well, that's what this show is here for, Brian.
Yeah.
It's about you coming to terms with who you really are.
Yeah, and thank you guys for coming along with me on this.
So I got a couple of listener letters here, Brian.
Okay.
My friend Glenn Greenberg, who has joined me for multiple commentary tracks through the Star Trek movies on the other show, has been sort of working his way through our movie film commentaries, and he's been very complimentary, by the way, on the camaraderie that you and I have.
Ah.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
And so he says, in reference to our Phantom Menace commentary, excellent. Just have to correct you on one thing. The notion of Anakin being the chosen one is brought up again after this movie. Yeah, because during the commentary, I say it's never brought up. That's not true. And I knew, actually, as soon as we finished recording, I was like, oh, wait, that's not true. In Revenge of the Sith, Obi-Wan right. shouts at him during the duel, you were the chosen one, et cetera, et cetera. So that is true. That is true, Glenn.
Yeah, good catch.
But let's think about the fact that we did forget about it so easily. Are we really wrong?
No. I like that.
I think it's George Lucas's fault.
Yeah. I didn't think of it. Can
the chosen one is really a representation of the power of myth.
The power of myth.
Glenn also adds, by the way, your George Lucas impression is hilarious.
Really?
He did say that. Yeah.
Okay. I was like, right after you did it.
Oh, he just sent me that. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he did say that, which is a very nice thing to say. I feel like anybody can do a George Lucas impression.
Yeah. It's fun to do.
It just involves pitching it higher and being passive aggressive.
Yeah, and like sort of like bringing your neck in.
Hey guys, if you know, I made the movies I wanted to make, and if you don't like them, it's you know, it's just nothing I can do about it. Okay.
Yeah. Wait. It's poetry. It rhymes.
It's like poetry. It repeats itself.
Yeah. Perfect.
Which, again, you know, people talk about Force Awakens being a karaoke version of A New Hope. You're just doing what George Lucas wanted.
Yeah.
It's like poetry. It repeats itself.
Yeah, exactly.
So shut the hell up.
That's what he says as soon as he stops, as soon as he's off mic. Yeah.
We poke fun at George Lucas in a loving fashion, and I want that to be very clear. Brian and I have nothing but affection for George Lucas.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, he shaped my imagination. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
It comes from a place of genuine affection, and I am not a hater by any stretch, and I'm not one of those people who can co-sign like the people versus George Lucas or whatever the hell stupid nonsense that's out there.
Right. No, completely agreed. Oh, and I also want to say to Glenn, I love those Star Trek commentaries. And people, I highly recommend checking them out. It's through our, it's on our feed, right? But it's through Nostalgia Theater.
It's not on our, it's two separate feeds. Yeah.
Okay. Well, check it out. Nostalgia Theater. Yeah. It's Zaki's separate show. And it is wonderful. He talks about all the stuff you remember as a kid and gets all these people who are involved, to discuss them. And, it's even, for example, sorry, I wasn't planning on doing this, but I got to pimp this because it's great. He talked about Garbage Pail Kids, which I had knew really next to nothing about because my parents wouldn't let me have them. But it was really interesting to learn about these things that were in my peripheral and were bringing me back and reminding me of things I had forgotten when I was a kid. And He-Man and stuff I did watch. And anyway, so Glenn and Zaki do these commentaries through all the Star Trek films, and they both have this huge wealth of knowledge, not only with the films, but with the books, like the novels and the comics and everything, and they apply it all. And I'm familiar with about half of the films, and I've listened to all of them and enjoyed them just as someone who appreciates learning about films and the making of them and the fans and who appreciate them. So my biggest recommendation for it. And they have an awesome camaraderie too that I really enjoy.
Oh, well thank you for that. Wow.
Yeah.
The check's in the mail, Brian.
Yeah.
Another email here, and this is from Philip Barker, who messaged us at moviefilmpodcast@gmail.com, and he says, "Greetings and salutations, Zachy and Brian. I have come to love your show, and it is in regular rotation on my podcast pool. The camaraderie, there's that word again, Brian, and articulation about film and television is unlike anything I've heard in all my years of listening to podcasts," which is only a couple years, but that's beside the point. Thank you for that. Philip says, "Now, we all know that this summer is pretty much getting kicked off with Marvel Studios' most anticipated film, Infinity War. But my question to you both is, in a post-Infinity War world, is it possible to continue to exceed these growing expectations? If Infinity War tops records across the board, can it be done again, ever? Can Marvel top themselves after Infinity War? Will Warner Brothers ever let someone actually make a DC movie the way they want to potentially achieve some kind of similar feat? April 26th cannot come fast enough, and maybe, hopefully, some of my burning questions could get answered. Keep up the great work, guys. You'll always have a fan in me." Thank you, Philip, for
that.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
The expectation thing is really interesting because it's, you know, I'm sure this is you too, Brian, but I mean, the best way to go into these movies for me is try to have zero expectations.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, I mean, this is going, being set up as the end all be all, you know, we've spent 10 years building to this. So how do you do something like that again?
Yeah,
I mean, and I think it has to do with, you know, almost like good songwriting, right? Like, how do you get someone excited about hearing the chorus again? It's like, well, you craft a verse that, you know, gets you excited to return. And it's all about timing and being a great artist. So I think it's possible. And even with the, you know, with Star Wars, I mean, but getting us as excited about when the prequels came out and we're like, wow, new Star Wars. And it was a huge thing. And then people kind of had their feelings and it tapered off. But then we got excited again, but it took time.
Yeah.
And, you know, some calculation. And
I mean, when you think about it, like using Star Wars as an example, when The Force Awakens came out, so much of it was about just hopscotching right over the prequels and saying, no, this is like that other Star Wars that you loved. Mm. Really tying heavily into nostalgia. I mean, I think to Philip's point about Marvel and sort of the challenges that Marvel has versus the challenges that DC has, they're very different challenges, right? Mm. Because Marvel has really, over the course of the last 10 years, ridden from victory to victory. I mean, if your one disappointment is the Incredible Hulk movie, that's a pretty good success ratio. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think for DC, they've obviously got different challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And so as far as whether they'll ever be able to achieve what Marvel has, no, I don't think so. And that's not because of the weakness of the characters or anything. I think it's because Marvel essentially has, you know, a 10-year head start.
Yeah, and I think about this a lot with just in life, really. I mean, what the people that succeed, like the Steve Jobs and all those sorts of people, they fill a void that wasn't there. Or, you know what I mean, with something that we hadn't thought of yet. Or, I mean, they may reinvent whatever, but they fill a need. They give us something that we didn't know we wanted. And so Marvel did it first.
They did the shared superhero universe first.
Yes. And so you can do it again, but you have to do it differently. Like, you can't repeat what they already did. You just have to find your way of doing it. Or, I don't know what it is, but you have to find your way of doing something first.
Yeah, and I mean, this isn't like some, you know, staggering revelation, but when the Justice League movie performed the way it did, I mean, that's proof positive that this universe is broken.
Yes.
Now, you know, you've got Wonder Woman coming out, you got Aquaman, we'll see how, but I mean, fundamentally, if you can't get your Justice League movie to play at a level higher than at least Man of Steel, then something's wrong, and I don't know how you fix that, to be honest. I don't know if playing at the same level as Marvel is even an option after that.
And it's interesting, too, almost like a good lesson, where people were saying that they were coming in too hot. You know, they, like, Marvel had time to sort of build, and they earned everything that they were doing, but Warner's was trying to catch up really quick, and it didn't pay off, and now they have to start over again in a way.
In a way.
And it would have been better for them, you know, like they've set themselves back even further because
of it. Yeah, I mean, you talk about like lessons you can learn. I mean, yeah, that's stuff that you could really apply in life in terms of how you plan stuff out.
We should write a book.
We really should. Things I learned from the movies, right?
Yeah.
But why don't we take a little break and we'll come back and talk some headlines, Brian.
Sounds good.
And we're back, and we have a whole bunch of headlines to get through, Brian.
Yeah.
So just to start things off, this like literally happened just overnight. Director Milos Forman has passed away.
Yeah, I was surprised. I learned that through this us talking this morning.
Yeah, I mean, you know, director of some of the greatest movies ever made, but it's almost like his name doesn't get mentioned as much.
Yeah, and I've, you know, being my age, I wasn't around for, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. That's something I discovered later and things like that, and Amadeus. And I remember when he did Man on the Moon, I think it was,
yes,
hearing his name as someone like, oh, wow, like Milos.
This is somebody important.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, well, who is he? Sort of learning about him a little bit later.
First time I really saw a film of his was People versus Larry Flint.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, obviously, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, I mean, that's one of the all-time greats.
Mm-hmm. And Amadeus, which I feel like doesn't get brought up a lot these days, but Amadeus is fantastic.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I mean, it's definitely a loss, and he was 76, I believe. Let me just check his age.
Yeah. Speaking of Amadeus, I can't even tell you how many times my brother brings up Salieri.
86, brother. Sorry. What's that, Brian?
So, I was just saying, speaking of Amadeus, you'd be surprised how much my brother brings up Salieri.
How does one randomly bring up Salieri? How does one drop that into conversation?
Just in admiring someone else's talent with a little bit of vitriol. You know, sort of a jealous appreciation of someone else's.
Do people understand when he brings up Salieri?
I don't know, but he knows it makes me laugh. Maybe that's why he does it.
It's hilarious.
But what's it called? On Netflix, Andy and Me or something like that, the Jim Carrey documentary about making Man on the Moon, which you can see Milos, long-suffering Milos, with Jim Carrey.
Yes. You know what's funny is I watched that documentary at the recommendation of one of our listeners, Jeremy Lloyd, who messaged us on Facebook and said, I saw this, it's really great. And I've been meaning to mention on the show that, I saw this. And it was because of him, and it was excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty, just as a fan of filmmaking in general, I mean, let alone that it was such a unique circumstance where Jim Carrey was completely transforming himself mentally, his soul, everything into an entire other person. Yes. But just seeing, and you hear those stories and you're like, wow, that must have been really fascinating. But this is a true fly on the wall documentary where you see literally how it affected everyone on set.
Right.
From the makeup chair to the soundstage. It's pretty fascinating.
So Milos Forman, 86, he will be missed.
Yeah.
Also, I just wanted to briefly mention this. Also passed away, Art Bell. Do you remember Art Bell?
I actually don't. I was going to ask. I'm sorry, I don't.
So Art Bell was a late night radio host.
Okay.
And so he hosted a show called Coast to Coast. And it was like crackpot conspiracy radio.
Okay.
not like Alex Jones, like freak show nutcase,
right?
But like calling in talking about aliens and stuff like that was Art Bell. And I think to some extent he was performing in a sense,
sure,
where he was playing a bit of a role, right? And it was more kind of like the Fox Mulder style radio, you
okay
know? So my memories of Art Bell are of like at night, you know, when I was, you know, a teenager, I would listen to the radio going to bed, and Art Bell wouldn't come on. He would come on later, but I would like fall asleep listening to the radio.
Mm-hmm.
So the radio would be on like all night. And so Art Bell's show would come on, And he's up here talking about, like, alien abductions and this and that and the other thing, like, end of the world prophecies, the doomsday scenario, like, all this stuff. Now I'm asleep, and I'm hearing this.
Right.
So this was the first time I realized that I could, like, engineer my dreams. So for me, Art Bell's radio show is just inextricably linked with this memory I have of my youth where I would start to deliberately leave the radio on just so I could have these very vivid dreams.
Like War of the Worlds scenarios.
Yes.
You know what's funny? You've always been into altering dreams. Remember you tried to alter mine once?
That's right. What was it? Like, I was playing the Inception music.
Yeah, we were staying at our friend's place. Zachy was in town. And you were there for like 3 days, I feel like. And the first morning I wake up and I hear you're like standing over me with your laptop playing the Inception music. And I was like, what's happening? And you're like, oh, I was just trying to see if I could mess with your dreams. And I was like, okay. And it didn't happen. Second day, same thing. I wake up, Zachy's standing over me with his laptop playing Inception. And I was like, no. Like, immediately, I just kind of woke up. Yeah, no, it didn't. No. And then the third night, no joke, I had this dream. I was watching a late night television show, and the band was playing the Inception music. And then I woke up without skipping a beat. I remember seeing you with your laptop, and I was like, it worked.
Incepted. I said, you've been incepted.
Yeah. That's
and then
funny.
I ran out of the room.
Man, it's been a something you enjoy.
And it all started with Art Bell.
Art Bell, wow.
72 years old, Art Bell. They haven't said the cause of his death, but it's a shame. Like I said, I'll always have a special place in my heart for the way he messed up my dreams.
Yeah. That was a very 90s thing, wasn't it? Like alien abduction.
I miss the quaint days when those were your conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
Because now it's like, oh, Obama was born in Kenya and this and that and the other thing, you know?
Yeah. No, but it was like all like crop circles and alien autopsy. Yeah. It was on like primetime television.
That's right. Well, that was basically like one third of Fox's lineup.
Yeah.
Was alien autopsy and then, the second alien autopsy.
Yeah.
I remember Jonathan Frakes had like a very... what must have been a nice second like career just hosting those shows.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's Art Bell, and again, he will be missed. Thank you. Thanks for the memories, Art. Yeah. Thanks for the effed up dreams. Another bit of news. This is kind of interesting, only because I feel like this would be something we'd be talking about more. But there is another Terminator reboot coming.
Yeah, what, 2019 or something?
2019.
Yeah. Oh, here, November 22nd, 2019. Yeah. And this is one that James Cameron himself is quote-unquote godfathering.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
So that's the only reason that anyone has any interest in this is my assumption.
Yeah. I caught the last 10 minutes or so of Genesis the other night, and I was like, ugh.
Why'd you do that?
I remembered, I'm going to spoil this because it's not going to matter in 2 years.
Yeah.
But where for some reason Arnold as the older model falls in liquid metal and all of a sudden he is liquid metal.
He comes out of it AT-1000.
With the capabilities. And I remembered it and I was like, did that really happen? How, it doesn't even make sense. And so I wanted to see it again. And I was like, yeah, it happens.
That's a thing. Yeah, it that movie I haven't revisited it the whole way through, but I've sort of jumped around in it, and it's just a bafflement is my only, like the creative choices are so dunderheaded.
Yeah. Anyway, one coming.
so we got one more stab at the Terminator, and part of this is because next year, many of the underlying franchise rights revert to James Cameron.
Mm.
Right, so the folks at Skydance, right, David Ellison, his company, they own the Terminator rights, so they were like, well, let's partner with James Cameron so that we can make something that he'll actually be on board for, and then presumably that gives them a little bit of leeway. So this is meant to be a Jurassic World type thing where it's handing it off to, like, the next generation.
This makes sense. I mean, right. Arnold, how many more of these can he do?
Yeah. So Arnold Schwarzenegger will, of course, be back, as will Linda Hamilton.
That's pretty cool.
That's interesting. Yeah. Yep. So this will be her first time appearing in a Terminator film since the second one, although her voice, I think, is in Terminator Salvation.
Yeah, and she's referenced in the third one, right? Like she's
right.
She's dead.
She's died in between. Yeah, so this is meant to be the actual sequel to Terminator 2.
Yeah, they're retconning.
Yeah, so ignore T3, Salvation, and Genesis.
Yeah.
Now we've got the actors who they've cast. We've got Natalia Reyes as the female lead. Diego Boneta is the male lead.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know either of these people.
No, I'm looking at their stuff. It's all sort of like TV.
It's all like young people stuff. And
yeah.
We're not young people anymore. but interesting to me is that Gabriel Luna has been cast as the new Terminator. So the villain, I'm assuming. Now, Gabriel Luna is... the only reason I know him is he played Ghost Rider on the TV series Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Really? That Ghost Rider's on that?
They had him like for an arc on that show.
Huh.
And I really liked him on that show. He was actually very good.
That's good. Yeah, well, yeah. It's a thankless task to be a new Terminator because everyone's just trying to do their best impersonation of Robert Patrick.
Yes, yes.
And it's impossible. So I don't know what you do. You still have to seem icy cold, but you got to find your own thing.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I hope he does.
This is, I mean, I need to ask you because obviously T2 is near and dear to you. I mean, it's near and dear to me too, but yeah. I mean, I think you even more so than me. I mean, how are you feeling about this?
I keep coming back, man.
You will watch it, but that's not saying much.
Maybe I should have learned my lesson by now, but
yes,
hearing that Cameron he gave his recommendation to 5, and yes. I think I knew what I was getting
into. And to 3, by the way.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, this is the thing people forget about. Like, because he's kind of distanced himself from T3, but I remember when Terminator 3 first came out, like, the Monday after it opened, he's like, in a word, I loved it. Jonathan Mostow, he did such a great job. Arnold is great. Whatever. It sure didn't sound like fake praise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I always say that, like, when people crap all over T3, which is a movie that it's no patch on the second one, but I do like it. I'm like, look, Cameron was on board with it until he wasn't, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and I like 3 a little less, but it's not that it's a bad action film. I think I can't sit it next to 2 and feel like they even belong in the same universe.
Sure.
And it says nothing about it as an action film. Like, I think there's some like great pieces in there. I just can't see them being related somehow.
You know, what I've said about T3 is, to an extent, what I say about Jaws 2. With Jaws 2, I'm like, well, it's probably the best Jaws sequel you're going to get without Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, okay. And the way that I feel about Jaws 2, which might even be a slightly less, I totally buy that. Yep.
Right. Like, and that's not necessarily a ringing endorsement, but it's like, well, it could have been worse, and with Jaws, it did get worse. And the Terminator franchise, I think of the sequels, T3 is the best of the non-Cameron sequels, I mean.
I totally agree.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, we can get into like what is that like? What, you know? It's like having a hard stool versus a runny, bloody stool. Like, you know, which do you prefer? I don't know. You know. Which is which? You know.
I thought your Jaws 2 comparison is actually, for me, that is perfect. I completely understand it now.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think? Because I have this stupid naive optimism where I keep like going, maybe this time.
What I have said on this show repeatedly is I will never be the guy to bet against James Cameron.
I'm okay if he's not going to come back and make it himself, and if he's going to be lost in Avatar land. I do like that at least he's overseeing some other stuff, and if he can sort of keep his fingerprints intact on those things and hire people that he likes and that align with his vision, like, that's kind of an exciting prospect.
Yeah, I mean, you know, unlike, you know, Jaws and Spielberg, I mean, Cameron wrote the Terminator movies.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
they
right,
sprang
right.
Fully formed from his mind.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if you say, all right, well, I'm not directing it, but this is my story.
Yeah.
Hey, okay. I mean, it's his thing. It's his universe.
Yeah.
I can't handle any more disappointment in my life.
I know. I hope it's good.
You know? The other thing, I mean, honestly, why couldn't we just have seen that highway receding into the distance and say that's the end there? That's the end of the Terminator story.
Hey, y'all, capitalism.
I know, but I mean, you know, it's like, do we even want a passing the torch Terminator story? You know what I mean?
I mean, ultimately, no. But I don't know. I get it. I understand the business side of Hollywood, or I accept it more these days now, just understanding the way it is. But no, I'm with you. I mean, that's probably
because realistically, looking at the leads, maybe I'm totally off here, but my sense is that this film will, in essence, mark the end of the John Connor saga.
Which it probably should.
That I agree with. But the Terminator story is going to become something different, right? So in other words, we're heading into, like, Force Awakens territory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So sure, it could be good. Again, if Cameron's got an idea, I'm interested.
Yeah, same. But, same.
You know, but it's like, you know, the ending of T2 is so great. Can we just leave it there, you know?
There's something that's a little, you don't think about it too much, but it's like a little scratch in the back of your mind where everything they're trying to achieve in 2 to stop this war, and you're like, well, you could have never stopped it anyway. Like, learning that later is a little, like, discouraging.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I kind of...
That's satisfying. Yeah.
I like the idea of, you know, because even, you know, the final cut of Terminator 2, they originally had shot, like, the post-script
right.
set in a non-nuclear, like, oh, we prevented it. But then they cut that out where they just said, well, we don't know what's coming, but at least we have hope now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just think, like, if there's a place to leave this franchise, it's right there.
For sure. For sure.
You know? But, you know, and it's funny, actually, because when we talk about sort of making sequels and ignoring other sequels, I mean, that Neil Blomkamp Alien movie,
mm-hmm.
where he wanted to make a direct sequel to James Cameron's Alien movie and just ignore the other ones, that's another example where, like, would it have been cool? Yeah, sure. But, you know, maybe it's for the best that that got kiboshed, you know?
Right, right.
Not to say Alien Covenant was, like, a great alternative to that. I think that franchise I'm over and done with now.
Yeah, yeah.
But same thing, you know, it's this, like, we're so awash in nostalgia that even me, who hosts a show called Nostalgia Theater, I'm feeling a little burnt out on nostalgia, you know?
Yeah, I'm ready for new things to feel nostalgic about.
Speaking of new things that people will feel nostalgic about, we have a new number 3 movie of all time.
Wow, The Commuter?
It is not The Commuter. It was a tight race, admittedly. I don't think you're funny, Brian.
I'm sorry, Liam. I'm sorry.
I'll just be sitting here listening quietly. You watch yourself.
Hey, you watch your doorstep, because you got a fruit basket coming from you know who.
I'll be waiting for it.
I'm talking about Black Panther, Brian.
Yeah, damn. I mean, is that, in terms of speed, I mean, is this like the fastest a movie has climbed to something so high?
Well, I mean, there was Force Awakens, right?
Oh, yeah, that probably.
Force Awakens is, if I'm not mistaken, the number one movie domestically?
Okay.
I think that's right, right?
Past what I assume was Avatar?
Yeah, I think it's Force Awakens, then Avatar, then now it's Black Panther.
Wow.
Right. So T'Challa has displaced Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
Titanic was in the top 3, you know, since it hit theaters, and that's not a bad run. 21 years in the top 3 of all time.
Mhm.
But there's a new king.
Yeah. Impressive.
Now, let's see. This is worldwide. Worldwide, it's Avatar, and Black Panther is like number 10 worldwide. But
okay.
But domestically, which, let's be honest, Brian, domestic is what matters. America first, right?
Yeah. USA.
Make America tops again at the box office. Hold on, let me figure out. I don't know how to navigate Box Office Mojo. I'm doing this in real time. I feel like I'm in Driving Miss Daisy. Right. Okay, here we go. Yeah. So we got Force Awakens at number one, Avatar at number two, Black Panther is number three.
Wow. And it's now, still in the top 10.
Worldwide, you mean?
No, I mean currently at the box office. I mean, it's still raking in the bucks.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah, crazy, right?
Yeah. It's not like it's like petering out.
Well, you know what? Because it's getting a second wind or it's keeping its wind going. I don't know what the metaphor is. But because you got all the Avengers hype.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean, Marvel couldn't be happier because if you look at all the TV spots for Avengers, it's like Black Panther and Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor.
Yeah,
yeah. Right? Anybody who predicted this movie would make this much money is a goddamn liar.
Yeah, I know.
Nobody. Chadwick Boseman didn't think he would make this much money. Kevin Feige didn't think he would make this much money.
Yeah.
What accounts for this, right? Because you know, last year, Wonder Woman was this legitimate cultural force, and it made gobs of money. Mm-hmm. Black Panther lapped Wonder Woman
mm-hmm.
multiple times. Why? What accounts for it?
Well, I think, obviously, there's a lot of factors that go into it. But I also think, really deep down at the core, is it's a good movie.
That helps.
You know, like, I've seen it, maybe I've only seen it twice, but I would comfortably watch it again. And those are the movies you want to go see over and over and over. You know, I know it's not that easy to just go make a good movie.
you know,
like everyone tries, but Wonder Woman was a good movie. So it had a lot of repeat viewings and this movie, it's just good. So I understand why people would want to go see it more than once.
Yeah. Yeah. Anecdotally talking to my students, I've had students being like, oh, I finally saw Black Panther. And these are people who would not necessarily watch a superhero movie.
Hmm. Oh, interesting.
But they saw it and they loved it. And so clearly there is this cultural momentum built up, like where it becomes not just something people are talking about, but something you have to see.
Right.
And that's what is that but lightning in a bottle? I mean, a Titanic was like that. Mm-hmm. Avatar was like that. Right?
Yeah.
Where it sort of expanded, it became an event. I mean, and even Force Awakens. So when we look at the domestic top five, we got Jurassic World, Titanic, Black Panther, Avatar, Force Awakens, right? Those are movies that became more than just, oh, let's go catch a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Even something like Jurassic World, it became about, you know, recapturing that magical experience we had in 1993.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So the next question here, can Avengers Infinity War match Black Panther? Which is a weird question that I didn't think I would ever be asking.
I know. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
Based on the performance of the previous Avengers films. And, I mean, what was that stat that came out this week where they said the pre-sales is bigger than the past seven or so Marvel films combined?
Wow.
Combined.
Amazing.
So I have a feeling. I was like, yeah, I'm going to catch it that weekend at some point. But now I'm like, oh, I should probably get my ticket.
Right. Yeah, I think it helps. I mean, we were talking about DC and Marvel. This is the exact inverse scenario of Wonder Woman and Justice League.
Yeah.
Because, again, Marvel's had the benefit of going from victory to victory. So it's not one of those things where you're like, oh, it's all that other stuff I'm not sure about. But, hey, at least Wonder Woman is in it. It's like, oh, all that other stuff I love. And Black Panther, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
And the stakes of all of these people combined is something we already care about.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah, a lot of their interplay and...
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, in the recent... I want to say it was in the second trailer where you have Tony Stark and Star-Lord like bantering with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, I don't know, this is me. I'm like, that's Tony Stark.
Yeah.
He's talking to Star-Lord.
Yeah.
That's crazy, you know?
Yeah.
So speaking of box office, this is another milestone from Sony, which is not a thing that we get to say often on this show.
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. I can't remember. Did you ever end up watching Jumanji?
I did, yeah.
And I think you're down with it, right?
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah, I caught it, it must have been December or January, whenever it came out. Yeah, it was, like, really fun.
So Jumanji has made $403 million domestically and $547 million worldwide. Foreign. So 950, just under a billion worldwide. And that makes it Sony's highest grossing movie of all time.
Wow. Who in the world would have guessed that?
Yeah. So and of course, they've already, like, fast-tracked Jumanji 3, so they're going to ruin it. That's my theory. Whatever mojo they had here, they're gonna screw it up, because I think this is a movie you don't make a sequel to, in my opinion.
Yes, talking about Terminator 2, like, it just was the perfect way to bring it back, and it was a clever, fresh take, and it was really fun and well done, and they wrapped it up, and going back feels unnecessary.
It does.
Yeah.
But what do you attribute this to? Why did it play as well as it did? I mean, this is more money than Spider-Man, more money than Ghostbusters, more money than Men in Black.
You know what I think, in very broad strokes? I think it captured a nostalgia thing, similar to Jurassic World. People are fond of the first film and their brand awareness and whatnot. But also, it just felt, like I was saying earlier, like, it felt like it was serving a purpose, or it was filling a hole that wasn't being filled currently. Like, I don't know of another sort of... I keep saying this, like, they were growing up in the 80s and 90s, there were these sort of, like, PG adventure films.
Yes.
You know, like Goonies and Back to the Future and all those sorts of things that we still love to this day, and, like, new generations still love. Like, they just were this special, weird, magical genre that I don't feel like they do very well anymore. And this felt like one of those films, and it delights me that it was made and that it did as well as it did, because I feel like there's something still viable with that genre, however you would call that.
Yeah, I mean, adventure movies aimed at the family.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And obviously it speaks to Dwayne Johnson's not only charisma and popularity, but also his ability to generally pick projects that really that play to his strengths.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's really good. I mean, we'll get into that with Rampage, but yeah, he knows how to best serve himself.
Yes,
in a film, and he knows what people want to see him do, for sure.
Well, and I think that's a good segue to this other story, which is the ongoing feud between Dwayne Johnson and Vin Diesel.
Yeah, I don't know a ton about this. I remember the tweets and whatnot. But what's this
well,
new thing?
Well, you may remember that when they were filming Fate of the Furious, Dwayne Johnson went on Instagram and he was, like, referring to certain candy ass co-stars,
mm-hmm.
and being, you know, not charitable. And so he didn't say who it was specifically, but people
narrowed it down.
People sort of narrowed it down, right? So here's what Dwayne Johnson said back in August of 16. The hashtag was zero tolerance for candy asses. All right. And it says, this is the caption. Some male co-stars conduct themselves as stand-up men and true professionals while others don't. The ones that don't are too chicken shit to do anything about it anyway. Candy asses. When you watch this movie next April and it seems like I'm not acting in some of these scenes and my blood is legit boiling, you're right.
Wow.
So, of course, at the time, people were like, who is this candy ass?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you go down the list, you got, like, Scott Eastwood and Jason Statham and Tyrese. Tyrese, who has his own opinions, by the way, as we've discussed in previous. Kurt Russell. And sort of it got narrowed down pretty quick to people saying, probably Vin Diesel.
Right? It is Groot? Yeah.
Yeah. So this is now I'm like going through the timeline here. A couple days later, the Rock goes back on Insta and he says family's gonna have differences of opinion and fundamental core beliefs. To me, conflict can be a good thing when it's followed by great resolution. I was raised on healthy conflict and welcome it, and like any family, we get better from it.
Hmm.
So that seemed well.
Mm-hmm.
However, let's see. So Vin Diesel, a few days later, after filming has ended, he puts out a message where he says he's talking about how great filming was, but then he says, "Give me a second, and I will tell you everything, everything." And the way he emphasized that made people say, "Okay, so he is the candy ass in question." Now, The Rock gave an interview to Rolling Stone last month where he basically said, "Yeah, it was that was a Jesus. We don't like each other."
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right. So he gives this interview where he says that they were having disagreements for whatever reason. Here we go. "Vin and I had a few discussions, including an important face-to-face in my trailer, and what I came to realize is that we have a fundamental difference in philosophies on how we approach movie making and collaborating. It took me some time, but I'm grateful for that clarity, whether we work together again or not." Ouch.
That's, you gotta wonder, right? I mean,
but no. But it continues, Brian. This is the cherry on top, if you will. The cherry on top of a bald sundae. Now the rumor at the time, if you watch the movie, it's very apparent that Luke Hobbs and Dom Toretto never have any scenes together.
Okay.
Right. And so the question was asked whether they were shot separately, because there's one scene at the end where they're the party on the roof. That, do you remember that?
Yeah.
They're never actually together, but they're both like kind of composited in together. And so this is what The Rock says. "That is correct. We were not in any scenes together."
Huh.
And as far as what happens next, he says, "I wish him all the best, and I harbor no ill will there, just because of the clarity we have." And then, Brian.
Yeah.
Actually, erase that last part about no ill will. We'll just keep it with the clarity.
Oh. Damn.
Right?
I would really love to know what they fundamentally disagreed on.
That's right. But, you know, last year they had asked Vin Diesel about this, and he's like, "Oh, well, they're blowing it out of proportion." But this is what Vin Diesel said. He says, "It's not always easy being an alpha, and it's two alphas. Being an alpha is sometimes a pain in the butt." And I'm like, you know, when you call yourself an alpha, that just feels very douchey to me. I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
Listen, Vin, with your thumb-shaped head. So to me, so it's looking like Vin Diesel The Rock does not appear in Fast and Furious 9.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're doing, you know, that spinoff with Jason Statham.
Yeah. Right?
The Bald and the Beautiful. So I need it to be called that now.
It has to be.
I'm like, I've got emotional capital invested in that being the title now.
Then Too but Bald, here, Too Beautiful for this.
Too Bald. So here's my question, Brian.
Yeah.
If The Rock does not appear in Fast 9, do ticket sales go down?
I would imagine it's still going to do really well because it's riding the wake of whatever it's on right now.
There's still gas in the tank.
People are just going to show up because they're so on board with this franchise. But I wonder if it won't do. Yeah, I think it won't do as well.
So if you are Universal, do you have a duty to try to get The Rock into the next Fast and Furious movie, no matter what?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was thinking about that. And if you're Vin Diesel, that's got to piss you off.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. He thinks he's The Rock of those movies.
Yeah. But that's the thing is The Rock is such a behemoth that Vin Diesel standing next to The Rock looks like me standing next to Vin Diesel.
Right. And right. I mean, we've talked about this, I think, but he has some sort of clause where he never loses a fight or something. Right?
Is that true? That is true.
I'm fairly certain I read that somewhere where whenever he's in a fight, he either never loses or it's a tie.
Well, it's hard being an alpha, Brian. It's hard. It's a hard life.
It's hard out here for an alpha. Yeah.
Anywho, so that's the thing. And we'll be talking more about The Rock in just a few minutes. This is also something kind of interesting that happened a few weeks ago, but I wanted to get your thoughts on this. The X-Men movies that were supposed to come out this year have been kicked into next year. So originally we were going to have The New Mutants that was coming out.
Yes.
I think like February was supposed to come out, right?
Oh, really? This year?
It's come out a few months ago.
Okay.
And they moved that a whole year, like April of next year or something.
Yeah, and they've added to the cast, I think, right? I mean, they're
like reshooting a third of it, apparently.
Right.
And then there was supposed to be X-Men Dark Phoenix, which brought back James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender and Jennifer Lawrence, etc. And that was supposed to come out in November, and that's now been delayed until February of next year.
Wow.
And, you know, so the reason being given is like, oh, we need time to do reshoots and whatever. And who knows? Like, I'm not here to be like, oh, this must be in trouble, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just find it fascinating that a studio is actually being like, hey, let's give them the time to get it right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's never a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, and it also tells me that they're very confident that Deadpool will make enough money that they don't need to worry. You know what I mean?
Fill the quota, for sure.
Because Deadpool lapped X-Men Apocalypse when whatever year that was, 2016.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that they're looking at it in that way. So I mean, I also wonder what part of this is a result of the impending Fox-Disney merger.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, you kind of wonder what it is. Because it's funny when you say that the Dark Phoenix thing being moved an entire year.
Yeah.
I feel like, oh, man, that's what's supposed to happen before you start rolling. You know, where you find these things and you fix them. But it's like when you lock into these dates and you just gotta get going.
The rationale that's been given, right, because it was supposed to come out in November. And so they did like a test screening, and based on notes and whatever, they're like, we need to go back and do some reshoots. And because of the cast being the cast and being very busy.
Right.
They're like, the only time it all works is like September or October,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't leave enough time for proper post-production.
Right.
Which, I mean, you tell me, that sounds legit.
It sounds reasonable.
Sounds reasonable, you know?
Yeah.
My sense, and maybe I'm totally wrong on this, but it sure feels like they're wrapping up the X-Men franchise.
Yeah.
Because whatever form it takes, if it ends up at Disney, it's going to be a different beast altogether.
Right.
Like, I could see Deadpool continuing on and being its own thing because it sort of exists in its own little bubble.
Yeah, I see what you're saying now, by the way, with the Disney. I wasn't putting it together. But yeah, like wrapping up this iteration.
Yes.
Yeah. Knowing that it'll probably be reborn as something else.
Speaking of McAvoy, I don't know if you heard that him and Bill Hader are in talks to join It 2.
Oh, I did see that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so McAvoy would be Bill. And Bill Hader would be the hypochondriac kid, I think.
Right. Right. And then Jessica Chastain, they've been talking about since.
She's like already on board, I think, right?
Yeah. So that's cool.
Yeah. Crazy how like that's like one of those sequels I'm like kind of anticipating.
Yeah. Same. Which I would not have imagined.
I was about to say, would you have imagined that like a year ago?
No.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
There is some Star Wars news, Brian.
Yeah.
Let's play the music.
We've got a new trailer. We've got a new Han Solo trailer. what'd you think?
Dude, I don't know. I'm an easy lay, I guess, you know?
I think so, too. Yeah, I'm having a harder time judging or perceiving what people are thinking about this. Because it doesn't seem like I'm not on Twitter, but I'm not noticing a ton of people really responding to it. Are you experiencing this?
Well, I mean, just from my social media, it seems like a lot of people who were maybe skeptical or down on it, many of them have had their minds changed based on this new trailer.
Actually, you know, yeah, that does remind me. I think it was that day I was noticing on Facebook and things like that. And then people I've reached out to, of course, have told me what they thought. But I had a few people that were kind of down on it, and I understand. But I'm with you. Like, I think I've realized that the specialness of Star Wars is slowly disappearing because of the frequency.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean I don't still love it. It just doesn't feel as monumental every time something is given to us.
And that's, I think, what we knew was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is, I think, the first time I've sort of felt that. But I'm in.
I would love nothing more than for this movie to prove the naysayers wrong. As far as I'm concerned, we've had three movies so far. All three have been good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any reason why this one wouldn't be good. And I've said this before. I'm so fed up and done with just toxic Star Wars fandom.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even like go in the comment section. You could be watching the Solo trailer and people are like, Last Jedi. Bleh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like I'm done with that discussion.
Yeah. It is exhausting. But I'll tell you one person who might be agreeing with you, Brian, is none other than Luke Skywalker himself, Mark Hamill.
Well, I'll be. It's good company.
So Mark Hamill seems like he's ready to put Star Wars in his rearview mirror.
Yeah, which I can understand. I imagine. I mean, I don't know. He seems like a pretty press friendly guy, but at the same time, I mean, he's been through a lot. Or maybe he learned a big lesson about not being completely candid with everything.
Yeah,
where he shared a little bit of his uncertainty with the Last Jedi, or Luke's character specifically in Last Jedi, and it's just people are still talking about it with him months and months later, and maybe he's like, you know, this is exhausting.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, obviously he's been out making the press rounds for the Last Jedi, you know, home video release, and I'm sure, you know, the question he's had to answer repeatedly is, oh, well, is Luke going to be back? And you and I are both sort of taking it as a given that, yeah, of course we're going to see Luke as a Force ghost.
I would imagine.
And I still think that's going to happen. But here's something he said to Games Radar. He says, I haven't really thought about Episode 9 because there's such a sense of closure. Luke's story is told. What more can I do? And this is where he starts getting a little bit more introspective, I guess. And you know, you have to start disconnecting from it emotionally. The main thing that shocked me in The Force Awakens was Han Solo is killed. I'll never get to work with Harrison again. Mm. Luke will never see Han again. That's what struck me. That was the first break. We lost a member of the band. And then what happened with Luke and The Last Jedi, I said, okay, that's the next link. When I was still thinking I'll come back as a Force ghost. And then to lose Carrie in real life, I said, that's it. They say you can never go home again, and that for me was the real indication that it's time to move on.
Hmm.
It's kind of sad, you know?
That is kind of sad. I mean, all that said, if they write him in, he will be there.
Here's what he said to ABC News, speaking specifically about Carrie Fisher being gone. He says, it really has tarnished my ability to enjoy it to its fullest. You were asking earlier, are you going to come back? I don't care anymore on that level because Han Solo is gone, Luke is gone. You just can't get the band back together the way you wanted it to be, and it shouldn't be that way. It is what it is. Rather than being sorry that we can't have more of her, I'm just grateful that we had the time with her that we did.
Hmm. Yeah,
so I don't know.
Make me a little wistful.
I know, right? It's. I mean, I said this before that you know. With Carrie Fisher's passing, I almost wish they would have tweaked the ending of The Last Jedi to allow Luke to be a more active part of the story.
Mm.
And that's as somebody who likes the movie that we got, and I have no problem with the way in which Luke died. But obviously, yeah, I mean, this next movie is going to be completely the new characters, and that's on one level, that is sad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not because we don't like the new characters, but because we're going to miss the old ones, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's, but I don't know. Given all that, I still think I won't bet on him not being in the movie as a Force ghost.
Same.
But the way he's saying it, where he's like, I don't even care if I come back. Like, I don't know. I kind of want to give him a hug, you know?
I know.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sad.
Yeah, now I'm like, I'm just sitting on it.
We're just like sitting here pondering our own mortality now. I mean, what he's saying, honestly, it's not that different from what many fans are saying who liked the movie, who are like, look, if you're not liking what these movies are doing, maybe it's time to move on, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not in a dismissive way. Like, it's okay to just walk away and say, well, I've got the ones that I like.
Right.
Without it being all like, oh, my childhood has been ruined and everything else. I think my sense, without the benefit of actually seeing him say it, I think that's what he's saying. Like, well, like even for himself, he's going through this process of realizing, like, well, that experience that we had making these movies from 1977 to 1983, that's never going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a part of him that's sad about that.
Yeah. Yeah, which is completely understandable. I mean,
I was about to say, yeah.
With that whole original trilogy, I mean, phenomenon is not a big enough word. And to return to that, it can never feel the same or as satisfying, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And with all the loss as well. I mean, it can only add things that I'm sure he doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that it's in the documentary, like when Luke kisses Prince Leia on the forehead before he walks out to, you know, face off against the First Order, how that was something that he improvised.
Mm.
And it was just this little thing, and how there's this added level of poignancy to it now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's it really is the farewell, you know?
Yeah.
In a sense. But that is our Star Wars news for this week. And Brian, you want to take a little break, and then we'll come back, talk about Rampage?
Let's do it.
All righty. And we're back. And Dwayne Johnson, I don't know if you heard of this Dwayne Johnson guy, Brian.
I'm not familiar with him.
He's you might know him better as his performing name, T. He-Rock. I can't take credit for that. That was John Cena on the Jimmy Kimmel Show, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But he is back in theaters this weekend with Rampage, which is being called the greatest video game adaptation ever made.
Really? By who?
by some people. Which, to me, that's sort of like being like, this is the best acne breakout I've ever had. Because I don't know what that means. Like, they're all terrible.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I would say that, but...
Many of them are not great.
Sure. Go. Maybe that's more of a comment on that.
The genre itself, right? I mean, this is the genre that brought us Super Mario Brothers, the movie.
Which I've never seen, but I have to someday.
You must watch it.
Yeah.
You absolutely must. Yeah, that's essential. But this is based on the 1980s arcade game, and it is actually in, so far at least, I mean, as we record this, it is in second place. Because
in its second weekend?
For the weekend, because The Quiet Place is cleaning up.
Which, go see it, people. Go see A Quiet Place, for sure.
Oh, man, there's another, like, just sort of organic phenomenon.
Yeah, I'm kind of happy I saw it before that.
Yeah.
When I didn't know anyone's take on it, and I was really enjoyed it a lot. And I was an unabashed recommendation, and it's really cool then to see everyone else's take on it. Be like, yeah, okay, yeah, that's what I thought. I thought everybody would enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Rampage, it stars Dwayne Johnson as Davis Okoye, which is the most Dwayne Johnson-ish character name.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, like you used to talk about Schwarzenegger's name.
I was about to say, like, we never got Schwarzenegger playing like Hans Lagenflarber, you know?
Yeah, right.
He was like, I'm John Jackson. Like, no, you're not.
Wasn't John Matrix one of them?
John Matrix, and of course, again, my personal favorite, Gordy Brewer.
Gordy Brewer. Gordy Brewer.
What's your name? Gordy. No, your real name, Gordon. but yeah, so this movie came out, and it's really, it's like, it feels like it was generated in a boardroom where you're like, we got giant monkeys, we got a giant crocodile, something's missing. How about Dwayne Johnson?
Right, totally.
Done.
Yeah.
And so I went with my kids to this.
Uh-huh.
And I did that because they love The Rock.
Yeah.
And they love The Rock because of Jumanji and stuff. And I was like, I think I need to sort of experience this from their perspective.
Yeah.
Because where I'm at with Rampage is I don't know what I thought of this movie, Brian.
I was so looking forward to hearing your take. Now I'm like, oh, crap.
That's literally me. Like, I don't know. Like, I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. It's The Rock and a giant monkey. And if that's what you're looking for, this is probably the best version of that you're ever going to get. It's like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, right? You're like, well,
yeah.
If you want a movie where Abraham Lincoln fights vampires, this will probably be the best movie that gives you that.
I can't believe I'm going to say this. I think Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter might have had a little more thought put into it.
I think you're right, yeah.
Which, by the way, I like that movie. That was
me
such
too.
Ridiculously.
I'm glad to hear you say that because I feel like I'm on an island somewhere when I say that.
It was. You know, it was such a weird idea, but they truly did put thought into it, which
they,
I thought
they leaned into that premise.
Leaned
They're
into
like,
it. That's the best way. Yeah,
we're gonna yeah.
Oh, so good. Yeah.
No, I was just. I mean, with Rampage, I'm like, it gives you what is promised. So I suppose call that a success.
Yes, it's the first thing I wrote down is this is a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I put it's equally as smart, maybe less, and had an enormous budget. That was the first sentence I wrote down in my thoughts.
See, there's so much stuff in the
I can't wait to talk about this. I have so many things written down.
This is really funny because I saw a press screening, and usually, folks, this is like behind the curtain. I go to most of these movies for free. Brian does not. So generally, the big movies that are coming out, Brian's like, oh, I'm going to watch this. But some of the smaller stuff, and I would consider Rampage being maybe not as big as some of the other stuff we talk about. I try not to be like, hey, Brian, go see this because it's like it's got to spend money and it's like a thing. So that's why I wasn't going to like be like, hey, go watch it, so we can talk about it. But as I'm watching the movie last Monday, I'm like, God, I wish Brian was seeing this. Yeah. So earlier this week, you're like, hey, I'm watching Rampage tomorrow. I'm like, oh, thank Christ.
I got to go to it. Okay, so here's a little peek behind Brian's curtain. I'm like, I wish I was more of a monster movie guy because I know everybody loves them so much, but I get kind of bored during them.
Yes.
And I was not anticipating this movie. I wasn't even planning on seeing it, but I was able to go to a press thing. And it was free, and those things have free popcorn. You know, so I was like, okay. I remember telling people at work too, I was like, I'm getting free popcorn tonight. Like, that was the thing I was looking forward to. And I kind of had fun with this movie.
I agree with you.
Yes.
But I mean, it is vapor.
Yes.
I'm having a hard time remembering specific plot points.
Yes. It's funny because I do have to sell it as I didn't want to see this movie. And I was sort of rolling my eyes at it a little bit too because I had that sort of same boardroom scenario in my head.
Yes.
That you were talking about where this is just we have a CG monkey that exists in this computer here that we can use. People like seeing cities destroyed. This does feel sort of in the vein of those like 90s Roland Emmerich movies.
Yes.
With the cartoonish, over-the-top caricature characters.
Oh, my gosh.
Malin, is it Ackerman or Ackerman?
Malin Ackerman is Ackerman. In, like, a whole other movie.
Yes, and I almost feel like she could have gone further.
Yeah, I was laughing out loud every time her character said anything.
Yes. I mean, she is playing a mustache-twirling... If she had had a mustache, she would literally be twirling it.
Like, there's a part in the film, this is early on. Okay, so just to... Brian, are we doing spoilers?
Okay, wait, let's I'm going to try to give really quick a fully formed... You can't spoil this movie.
I'll defer to you. How do we want to
proceed? I will say this. Do I recommend it? If you think this is something you're going to like, yes. But I don't think anyone's going to go in and go... Oh, that was better than I expected. Does that make
yes.
sense?
Yes. Those who like this sort of thing will find it the sort of thing they like.
Yes. And I will say that it takes a long time to get to said rampage.
Yes.
When it does happen, it is pretty cool. And I was actually really impressed with the visual effects in this movie.
Yes.
I thought about it multiple times. Usually a movie like this... That isn't like a Spielberg movie where he can afford whatever he wants. They hide a lot of stuff through smoke and whatnot, but they didn't really do that in this. And I was like, man, these creatures look great. This destruction looks great. It is dumb as rocks. No pun intended.
Yes.
But I did walk out with a dopey grin on my face, and my friend Chad and I watched it together, and we saw it at a press thing, like I said. And you could tell they were like, And Chad and I were like, I don't know, man. That was kind of fun.
Like it is dumb fun.
Yes, it is dumb, but fun, kind of fun. so.
All right, dude, let's get into some spoilers. Okay.
Spoilers.
So, like, the movie starts with, like, the space station, and there's, like, this rampage virus or whatever it is, right, got unleashed, and this rat is, like, giant-sized.
Wait, why are they in space, Zachy?
I don't know.
So no one can see what they're doing.
Because it's an evil corporation.
Yeah. That's why we did the experiments in space.
So I think the company's called, doing. Like, Evil Co.
Yeah, they may as well be.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's very... So then the space station explodes, and you got these little, vials containing the stuff that gets rocketed to Earth.
Yeah, all land in America, yeah.
Yeah, of course. In very convenient locations.
Yeah.
And so then we cut to Chicago in the Sears Tower, by the way.
Yeah.
Where Evil Co. has its headquarters.
Yeah.
And Malin Ackerman, who is like the Mwahaha villain, and her brother, who's just dumb as a stump.
Yeah.
He's there to be like, well, what about this? Like exposition, you know?
Yeah.
And she can be like, we're going to hire mercs. What are mercs? Oh, you know those people last year who we called killers for hire? Or like it's like...
Yeah, she says, like, remember when we acquired this, like, mercenary group last year and you called them, killers for hire or something like that?
It's basically... So that's the first moment where literally unprompted, I'm like, blah! Like, I just started laughing. Because I'm like, who talks like that?
And the brother, by the way, he reminded me of that scene in The Naked Gun where, what's his name? George Kennedy is eating and he like takes a bite out of one hand, he lifts another hand, he has a hot dog, and he lifts the previous hand again and he has something. Like, there's a part where he's eating a Pop-Tart.
Yes.
And I wish he had actually had the foil wrapper that said Pop-Tart, and then it shows him again and he's eating like a Wendy's hamburger. I just kept wishing like he was just, they should have just
done
it.
You keep cutting back, he's got a different thing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Which made me laugh. I like that. That's funny.
So it's like Joe Manganiello, who's in it for like 5 minutes, basically.
Yeah.
Just to be like evil guy. How do we know he's evil? Because he's got like the scar over his eye.
You know? Right.
Evil
right.
Mercenary guy. And then, you know, we've got this wildlife preserve where Dwayne Johnson is like animal lover guy, right?
Yeah. And every woman wants to do him.
But he prefers the animals, right?
But he's not interested.
And see, this is where, because I'm watching this, and it's The Rock. And first of all, The Rock is so goddamn charming.
Yes. God help him. Okay. Like, he just is. Like
He just is. And so that's where it really, like, the switch flipped for me. I'm like, this, you know, we talk about Schwarzenegger. In 1980s, this would have been Arnold Schwarzenegger in this movie.
Yes.
And it would be Arnold being like, my friend, he's a gorilla, and he's George, don't do it, George, you know, and you'd be watching him running across the country, right?
Right, yeah.
And I'm like, that. The Rock is plug and play.
Yep.
Because he's not playing a character, he's playing The Rock, just like Arnold.
Yes.
And so, again, this goes to, like, that it's all about expectations. What are you expecting to get out of this? Well, if you put The Rock in a movie, you know what you're getting.
Yes. Yes.
This is if San Andreas had a baby with Kong Skull Island.
Yes. Yeah.
That's this movie.
And it's funny too, I wrote this down. I mean, The Rock is playing The Rock.
Yes.
And he is so much The Rock that you need characters to state his personality traits just so we know that the writers thought about it. Like, there's a part in the middle where this scientist who's tagging along with him, she's like, "So, what is with you and not liking people at all?"
Right.
And I was like, he doesn't like people. What's she talking about? Oh, right. They're trying to make him a character. Like, I really had that thought. I was like, I don't get that at all from him. Like, oh, they're trying
to make him. He seems very lovable. Not, yeah.
Yeah. Someone other than The Rock. I get it.
But he has to have that tortured backstory, right?
Yes, exactly.
About the poachers and this. It's funny. So Jeffrey Dean Morgan plays like this federal guy who like starts off as kind of an adversary.
Yeah.
And then he kind of becomes an ally. But he has like essentially The Rock like saves his life when he didn't. And I love that we call him The Rock because he's
The Rock.
You know, he's not Davis, whatever. He's The Rock. Yeah, you're The Rock.
Yeah.
So he saved Jeffrey Dean Morgan's life, and Jeffrey Dean Morgan is doing this like Southern accent or whatever.
A caricature of a caricature. Yeah.
It really is. Right. Exactly.
He's like, well, listen here, son. You know, he's
yeah, as he like fondles his ivory gripped, you know, pistol on his hip.
I'm just a simple country boy, but what I think, you know.
My grandpappy used to say.
Yeah. So here, okay, so he, so the Rock saves his life, so he starts looking out for him, and the Rock's like, why'd you do that? And here's what Jeffrey Dean Morgan says. He's like, well, my grandpappy used to say, us assholes got to stick together. And I'm like, did your grandfather say that to you, really?
I know. Why?
When did grandpa say that to you? I'm just like, did he just say that and walk away? Like, what? What's the... You know what I mean?
I got to give him credit, though. When that character was introduced, I was like, oh, my, are you kidding me? Like, it feels like that South Park episode where they're writing Family Guy, and they just have the manatees and the balls, and they're like, you know, over-the-top, charming Southern FBI agent or something. And at first I was rolling my eyes, and by the end I was like, I love this character.
I'm totally with you. I'm totally with you.
I loved him. Yeah, he was great.
He was really funny. So, yeah, I agree with that. And then, so we end up at the big showdown. Okay. Oh, here's the other thing, right? Like, you get like a gruff army colonel guy.
Yeah.
And the Rock is like, listen, you got to evacuate the city. And he's like, I'm not going to do that. And I'm like, why don't you guys ever do that? Like, just the guy knows what he's saying.
Yeah.
It's like he has to say, I'm not going to do that just because that's what's required of a movie like this.
Yeah. And there's three well, they don't know at the time, but there's two monsters heading to the city at that point. Of course you evacuate the city. What is wrong with you?
This is something we've never seen in real life. You would, yes, of course you would evacuate.
Yeah.
You know? So they go to the Sears Tower. Now we watch the Sears Tower literally fall over.
Which looked really cool.
It looked really cool, but I'm sitting there watching. I'm like, remember after 9/11, we were like, we're never going to make movies like this again.
You know, it's funny you bring that up. I had that feeling in the aftermath a little bit.
Yes.
And I've actually seen, because when it was going down, I was like, wow. I think because it looked so good. I was really actually impressed that it looked as good as it did. But I have seen some articles talking about 9/11 imagery in this movie. And also the almost, according to some people, like irresponsibility of not portraying the carnage. They go out of their way to be like, don't worry, the city is evacuated. I was like, that is an enormous undertaking that happened very quickly.
I was like, the city would not be evacuated that quickly.
Never. But then they do show some people.
Yes.
Down there later, which is a little confusing.
If the Sears Tower toppled over, that would be horrifying.
Yes. Yes, of course.
So definitely, as I'm sitting there, as a Chicagoan, just like you, Brian.
Yeah.
And I'm watching the Sears, or sorry, the Willis Tower.
Yeah.
Eh. As it's toppling over. I have to admit, that made me a little bit uncomfortable, even as it looked, as you say, very cool.
Now I feel a little bad. You know what was funny about that moment, though, was he's in a helicopter with the scientist, and she's like, you can't fly this. It has no tail. And he's like, we're going to ride the skyscraper down. Right. And I was like, yeah, all right, that makes sense. And so as the skyscraper's going down, that doesn't make any sense at all.
No.
And he doesn't. Like, they actually don't make contact with it. They're just spinning in circles. I was like, that sounded cool on paper, but I don't really know that that makes any sense, nor did they do that.
I don't think you followed through.
Yeah. But anyway.
I did. I mean, the moment where Malin Ackerman gets swallowed up by the crocodile, I want to say.
Or, no, I think it was George. I think it was the ape.
Oh, he eats her. That's right.
Yeah.
That was like the bust out applause moment in my theater.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that happened in mine. I can't remember.
I mean, it's almost like they set her up the entire movie just for that moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Well, and then similarly, her brother, and maybe this is why I didn't think about the carnage as much, applying it to real world feelings or thoughts, was you have her brother then, who's trying to, you know, escape. And Jeffrey Dean Morgan character?
Yeah.
He's like, you can go, sir. You know?
And so I say, sir. Yeah. Why don't you hand over that there old computer, I say.
Yeah, and we'll just forget about the whole thing, sir. And so then the guy's like, okay. And he, like, runs out of the building.
With his Wendy's hamburger in one hand and his Pop-Tart in the other.
Yeah, sipping on a Fanta. And he, like, runs outside and then is immediately crushed by a rock or falling debris, like Looney Tunes Wile E. Coyote style.
It, yeah.
And then Jeffrey Dean Morgan is like, almost like acts like he knew that was going to happen.
Right.
And I mean, I'm done with applying real world anything to this movie. I mean, this is a cartoon at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, it's one of those things, you know, it's actually funny, but the end of the movie, the Rock, so George, the albino gorilla has been sort of turned evil because of the machinations of, you know, evil sister and evil brother.
Yeah.
Bill and Gloria Evilman. I don't know what their names are.
This is the movie where that may as well be.
Right.
Yes.
So he overcomes that, and he joins the good side again, and so he fights the evil crocodile and the evil wolf, and then it looks like George has died.
I was going to bring this up. Yes.
Okay. So, well, just behind the scenes, this is kind of interesting. Originally, he was supposed to die, and The Rock said, "I will not do this movie if George dies."
Wow, that is, I appreciate knowing that, because when I left, I was thinking, I think George should have died.
Really?
Yeah, but you know what? Okay, wait, actually, I take that back. In a version of this movie, that would have been the way to go, but this movie is so bonkers.
Yes.
That maybe it does feel more true to itself to have it. Well, okay, so he doesn't die, and then what happens, Zachy?
then he makes like a gratuitous sex motion.
Yeah, with the finger in his hand.
Yeah, so this movie has been dropping shit bombs left and right, and I've been kind of like, I went with my two older kids, and I'm kind of like, and then...
Oh, I thought you meant literally, like this movie was...
Oh, no, I mean like the language.
Yeah.
Every other word is shit, and I'm like, oh boy, you know, I don't want to have to explain this to my wife. And then he makes like the
universal
sex motion with his fingers.
Gestures for sex, yeah.
Yeah, and my kids just bust out laughing, and I'm like... Okay. And we were doing so well too, you know.
Yeah, it goes from, I mean, they try to make you really buy this bond between The Rock and George, and when he died, I mean, I wasn't sad, but I was sort of like, enough, I understood what the movie was doing. I was like, yeah, well, and he died, and I kept thinking, what are you gonna do with this oversized ape?
Yes,
like, you have to kill him. That was my thinking in the last act. I was like, so you have him go out like a hero. And, you know, but then, when they brought him back to life, and it just felt a little tacked on. But I guess in line with this movie.
So check it out. So here's what Dwayne Johnson told Rolling Stone about that specific choice to keep George alive.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, so the script comes in and I'm reading it. And at the end of it, George dies. I'm like, no, did I miss something? George can't be dead. But I go back and yeah. And he says, this moment became the number one topic of discussion between himself, the director, the producers, and the studio. I don't like a sad ending, he says. Life brings that shit. I don't want it in my movies. When the credits roll, I want to feel great. And he says, his concerns went up the chain of command, and we had a big meeting where they gave me all the reasons they thought George should die, he says. He sacrifices himself, saving the world, killing these animals who had ill intentions to harm mankind. He sacrifices himself like a brave soldier. Okay, but this is a movie. There's a crocodile the size of a football stadium. We're not making Saving Private Ryan.
I get it. I don't think he's wrong with this movie, actually.
Here's one of the producers. Dwayne rarely digs in, but on this, he was very adamant. It was back and forth for about 2 months.
Oh, wow.
And so here's Dwayne Johnson. My problem is I have a relationship with an audience around the world. For years, I've built a trust with them that they're going to come to my movies and feel good. So every once in a while, you have to drop this card, which is you're going to have to find another actor. We need to figure something out. Otherwise, I'm not going to do the movie.
Hmm. Well, that goes back to what you were saying. I mean, he knows what he's doing. Like, he knows what a Rock movie is.
Yeah.
And I think if this movie was slightly different, I did think the way to go was to have George die. But this is the movie it is, and it didn't surprise me that he lived. And not only did he live, but then he, like, makes sex gestures with his hands for some reason.
That's almost like the perfect place to end this discussion.
I know. Wait, I have just a couple more things I want to say real fast.
Yes.
Real fast. I did enjoy one of the antennas of the Sears Tower opening up and being a beacon to summon monsters. That was fun.
Yes.
I liked also, Oh, the exposition is out of control in this movie. Had to bring so paragraphs of nonsense, which made me laugh. And then I just, the one thing I want to say that I thought was very funny, because I thought this the moment it happened, when the beacon is going out of the top of the Sears Tower, and it's like, beep, 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 beep. Beep, beep, beep. Like, what it does is then it cuts to each monster, wherever they are, and then it starts again, like silence, and then beep, 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 like summoning. And then it cuts to, like, you know, the airplane where George is, quiet, and then beep, 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 beep. And, like, the corniness of it reminded me. I was like, this is out of, something out of Batman 66.
Yes!
When, like, a cartoonish villain, you keep showing what the bizarre, nonsensical beacon is doing, and you cut to these different hilarious scenarios where all the monsters are being summoned. So I don't know.
I agree with you. It's dumb as a bag of hammers.
Yes.
But if this is what you're looking for, you won't be disappointed.
That I think that, yes, that is the perfect way to sum up this movie.
Yeah. I mean, this is not A Quiet Place where you're like, you got to go experience it. No. What you see on the poster, what you're seeing in your head based on that poster, you're going to get that.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's Rampage, everybody.
Rampage.
My goodness. Okay, well, you want to wind things up?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm actually very glad we had this conversation, because as tends to be the case, we did kind of end up in the same neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
But our next episode, Brian, our next regular episode is going to be Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah, wow. Can't believe it's here.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
It's already here. But we will be back before that, Brian. I don't know if you heard, but you and I, we're going to be doing a commentary track for Iron Man.
This is true.
Where the Marvel Cinematic Universe started in 2008. 10 years later, we are here to mark that occasion and also bring up the curtain on Avengers Infinity War by going back to the beginning and talking about where it all started.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be fun. So look for that next week. If people are looking for you, Brian, where should they go?
Well, I also, in addition to this, I work on a TV show.
Oh, I thought you were going to do a Jeffrey Dean. Well, sir, I don't mind saying my grandpappy used to watch a TV show.
Yeah. Wherever beers are being clinked, no, mint juleps. Wherever mint juleps are being clinked in a bar and smiles are all around, I'll be there. Yeah, I work for a show called Puppy Dog Pals. No, in seriousness, I do. And it's on Disney and Disney Junior, and it's for young kids and people who love puppies going on adventures. So check it out, and I think you'll like it.
It's for the young and the young at heart.
Yep, exactly that.
As for me, you can find me on my website, zakiscorner.com, Z-A-K-I-S corner. I haven't been posting there as often other than podcast updates, and that's just because of the insanely busy teaching schedule I've had the last few months. But I'm hoping with the release of Infinity War to be posting more movie reviews over the course of the summer. And got some other fun content coming up. If you're looking for me on social, you can find me on Twitter at Zacky's Corner, and I'm also on Facebook, etc. As for us, you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviefilmpodcast, and you can message us there, or you can email us at moviefilmpodcast@gmail.com. You can look for a new episode of the Nostalgia Theater Show coming up in the next couple days, where I'll be talking to Mark Hughes from Forbes as we mark 80 years since the creation of Superman. This next week Wow. sees the release of Action Comics number 1000, so we recorded a special show sharing our mutual affinity for the Man of Steel.
Very cool. I look forward to that.
Yeah, that'll be a fun one. I'm looking forward to sharing that. And like I said, we've got some fun movie film commentaries coming up in the next couple weeks. And the summer season's about to start, so hunker up, folks. Please also go to iTunes and leave a review, leave a star rating. Every little bit helps. Much appreciation for everybody who has done that thus far, but keep that love coming our way. And with that, I am ready to turn out the lights on movie film 145, but we'll be back soon. Thanos is coming. And we'll be here to talk about it. Thanks, everybody.
Welcome, friends. It's the Movie Film Podcast. Okay. Podcast, enjoy the show. Zacky and Brian are talking about movies. Movie Film Podcast on the radio.